Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and our panel discussion this morning. It is Tuesday, the 3rd of May. Very nice to have you with us on this rainy, cloudy day, but it's...
I like it.
Yeah, it's a fine day. It's a fine May day. So let us get to the subjects at hand. I want to introduce our panel to you officially, and then we will give you the information of how you can be a part of our program, and then we will get into the stories that we want to talk about today. There's a lot of good stuff, so we want to get to it. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Hello, Joe.
How are you?
Don't ask.
All right. It's all good. And Rosemary Armeo is here. We are thrilled to have her, of course, director of the journalism program at UAlbany. Thank you very much.
Really thrilled?
Yes, thrilled.
Yes, we're always thrilled to have you.
Yeah.
When you're not here next week, we'll be like, oh.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that ain't right.
Be just a little less spark in the conversation.
Well, yes.
But when you get back, you can tell us about your experiences with the TSA.
Oh, I can't wait.
We have a TSA story coming up. We're very excited about it. I gift-wrapped it for Rosemary last night. And Mike Spain is here, associate editor of the Times Union newspaper. And, well, they're just the toast of the town, aren't they?
I want to congratulate Mike and Rex because I have never seen anything like the editorials in the New York Times, which are referencing the Times Union and their great work on these contemporary Albany-based stories, which are so great. I'm just astounded and very happy for you, Mike.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
And this was on the Abeloff story?
The Abeloff story, the Rensselaer County DA challenging the governor and the attorney general over jurisdiction in the shooting death of a local man by a Troy police officer.
But I think they're also, to some degree, I can't prove it, following you guys on your excellent coverage of the ethics issues in the governor's office and the legislature.
Yeah, we've been on top of that. That's a big story in Albany. Maybe we can talk about it.
Yeah.
All right. So, why don't we get to
what did the editorial in the New York Times opine about Abeloff?
Oh, well, it's one of the few pieces of good news for Governor Cuomo these days.
The Times still behind the governor.
Yeah. Supporting the governor and the attorney general.
Yeah. Okay.
You know,
well,
and saying, and they point out, as did the Times Union, all the things that were not done correctly before this. And I think you mentioned it yesterday, Rosemary, all the things that were not correctly done that could have led to, an indictment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's start there and talk a little bit about what's going on here. Of course, there is the Abeloff story, as we mentioned, which is making national news, actually. But there is also the ongoing story about the investigation into an ex-Cuomo aide, Joseph Prococo, who financial disclosure statements... currently at the center of the investigation involving lobbying and conflict of interest show that he earned at least $70,000 in consulting fees in 2014 from two entities that do business with the state.
To say nothing of what his wife was getting.
That's right, which I believe was another $70,000 to $100,000. Yes. The aide, Joseph Prococo, was one of Mr. Cuomo's closest confidants and was employed by him as his executive deputy secretary until January when he left for a job as a senior vice president at Madison Square Garden. Do we know why that move? I mean, can we?
We know what they said. Mike? We know that they said it has nothing to do with any investigation.
No, okay. I mean, he's got young children, and he and his wife, who live in Westchester County, were looking to make some more money, and he went into the private sector. That was the explanation.
Yeah, but there was a whole bailout from the governor's office,
Well, he did receive a bonus from the governor's campaign money because
was
he did
150?
Take a... Yeah, and he between 100 and 150, according to the disclosure statements. And during the time when he received... It appears that during the time when he received these payments from the companies that do business with the states, he was out of state employed, but he was employed by the Cuomo reelection campaign. So he was technically not working for the state at the time.
Well, you know, Mike, what I loved about reading your stuff today, and it went on and on and on, and you really had to have a concentration.
Scorecard.
In order to do it. But it doesn't stop with this one character, with Prococo. It goes on and on and on. There's a guy named Todd Howe. Now, Todd Howe is interesting.
He's been around a long time.
That's right, to me, because he is the head of the subsidiary of the number one law firm, biggest law firm in and we know a lot of these
Osterman, Whiteman,
and Hanna. We know many of those folks, some very good folks there, and I am sure today they're not happy with the association.
Right, they have a lobbying arm, and Todd Howe.
Well, they have a Washington lobby arm. They also have an Albany lobby arm.
Right. They do lobbying, of course, and he was he's been a big part of that. He was also an aide to Governor Mario Cuomo, an advance man, you know, worked in his administration and has been close to the Cuomos over the years.
Yeah.
So what does this mean for the governor? How worried should the governor be?
The governor should be worried. And the governor is worried. That's clear because he has already hired a former federal prosecutor to look into his own operation, the operation of that's all going on. This all revolves around the so-called Buffalo Billions, and to put it mildly, and by the way, one of your favorite discussants, Elaine Calieros, is in it also.
Referring to Rosemary, there, right?
Yes, I was. Yeah. No, Rosemary has interviewed him and talked to him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and
we're tried.
You know, he's one of the top. He is one of the top. He is the top money maker in New York State government.
State government,
yeah,
right.
Generally regarded as untouchable because of the relationship he has with the emerging tech sector of New York State, which he has gotten great credit, you know, for doing. But he's been mentioned as part of this whole investigation that is going on also.
Mm-hmm.
So it really has tentacles that are all over the place. And if I were the governor, I would be worried because, you know, people like the Times Union have been making these associations and showing us who talked to who and who did what for who. And it's really quite something.
I just want to say before Mike gives us some more information, but the governor on Monday defended Prococo yesterday, saying it was totally allowable for him to have done so of the acceptance of the fees from the entities with business before the state while serving as the governor's campaign manager. When you leave state government, you can work in the private sector and you can represent private sector companies. And the governor also said that he had been in contact with Prococo since Friday when all of this broke. And the conversation was mostly personal in the how are you doing front.
And that they were just devastated. He and his wife were devastated by having this investigation going on.
Who was Prococo?
Prococo, yes. Right, and it was very difficult. You know, it's a very difficult thing to have the U.S. attorney, Barrara, coming down hard on you.
That would seem like a bad day.
Yeah, and the governor himself, you know, he would prefer to have his own former U.S. attorney, so he hired his own attorney to help guide him through this. Some cynics would say, you know, now you have two. You have your own and you have the other one.
Okay, so here's the question. Here's a governor.
I just said that.
So, cynically. Right, Mikey. So here's a question, right? The governor sets up a Moreland Act commission to ferret out graft and corruption. We don't really know what happened, but we do know that they were looking into places that clearly were not advantageous to the governor. And he closes down the commission. It was one of the worst things that has ever happened to this guy. And people, like me, will let go of it because, you know, it didn't make a lot of sense. And we know the U.S. attorney, Preet Bharara, was furious about it also. So now he hires a former prosecutor, federal prosecutor, to do this. I ask you all a question. What happens if this guy, now having to choose between his integrity and his career, comes up with a scathing report on what was going on in the governor's office? I'm just asking a hypothetical. What happens if that happens? Will the governor disassociate from this guy too?
I'll take a shot here. I know the least probably of the three of us, but I do have feelings about this. And it is that the project that is at the heart of the new investigation, and even the project to reform ethics, are worthy, and it's a good thing. But there's so much money involved. It didn't have to be. You don't have to do this with graft and corruption, but there's such a temptation that that's why investigation is needed.
Well,
and I think that's clearly the case with the governor and Kelly Arrows. They have done terrific things for the state, but they how did they do it? That's what we're looking at. And I'm not so sure that the governor disbanded Moreland because of it was looking at him. I think it was looking at people. We know it was at Scalos and and Silver. I mean, that's what I intuit. That's what you can tell from the evidence.
They
were looking at evidence that were hurting people he worked with. Well, and he made a deal, and it has hurt him.
He made a deal. That's right. It's important to remember the situation a couple years ago when he disbanded the Moreland Act Commission. He exchanged that for some support to make some moderate.
Mike, he says that.
Right, right.
But we also know that the real estate agent, right. The real estate people who are giving money out over hand over fist to everybody, were giving it to him also.
And we do know that there were reports that as
things got a little sticky there, he tried to moderate the investigation. We do know that the second floor.
Right, his position. Let me clarify. Yeah. His position has been that he was able to negotiate eliminating the Moreland Act Commission in exchange for some concessions from the legislature for better campaign finance laws and better controls. They were minimal. He's been criticized for that, and everybody, including most editorial pages across the state, have said that it was just basically stopping them because they were getting too close. It was uncomfortable, but. The important thing now is you have this investigation of the Buffalo Billions and people close to the governor. You have interesting revelations about the campaign financing methods used by Bill de Blasio's people to help influence state Senate elections, and that has come out, and we've been reporting about that. The Times has been reporting about it. And you have about 21 days left when the legislature is meeting before they go out of session. Today, their former speaker of the assembly is going to be sentenced in federal court for corruption, and then the former Senate leader will be sentenced soon after that. I mean, you have a situation that's ripe for reform. There's plenty of things the legislature can do, and they're talking about Uber.
Exactly.
You know?
That's well
I mean, it's
put.
It's really, really a problem when nobody, the arrogance of all the elected officials that they do not want to take a step to clean things up.
I swear, I just turned the computer on, and Michael, a regular correspondent, writes, "What makes you think the governor won't suspend this investigation when it gets too close to him, like he did with the last one?"
Well, he can suspend his own investigation, but he certainly can't suspend the federal investigation.
Right. He can get rid of his own prosecutor that he hired, but I don't think he can control Preet Bharara.
But we were making the comparison yesterday, Mike, mm-hmm. to this investigation that the governor is doing to the Chris Christie Bridgegate investigation that the governor.
Mm-hmm. Right. When you hire your own an outsider to come in and investigate you while there's another investigation going on, people are cynical. They say if you're paying for it, what are they going to do? They're going to deliver you. They're going to clean it up for you and provide evidence for you to say that you're.
But it also gives you a head up on the weak spots, the weak people, and you are better prepared to deal with the real investigator.
Mike, you make a very good point that I hadn't thought of, as usual. Are we sure who's paying the money for the investigator?
Oh, I think it's taxpayers.
It's a state investigation.
You and I.
Yeah, I don't believe it was being paid for with campaign funds. I could stand corrected. Good question. We should check it out.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Did you want to get to some more letters? And
okay.
Then we'll go
EJ says, EJ, and I love this letter. "Hi, everyone. Made it safely to Kennebunkport, my new home in Maine. I took your advice and downloaded the WAMC app, and I'm so happy to be here in my absolute favorite place in the whole world and to be listening to my absolute favorite radio station and program in the whole world. I brought a piece of New York with me, and I will continue to be a dedicated listener and a member. Yay for Alan."
I don't believe it.
The world is a better
letter.
Why'd you like that one, Alan?
I didn't deserve it. I didn't. Well, that's why I read it.
Really?
Yeah. Really. Right. And I don't know. Is there anything? Do you see anything else, Dave?
Yeah, maybe that's it.
We haven't talked about Trump, so there are no letters yet.
Yeah, I know. We'll get to that in a second. Okay, so last call on in the just a couple seconds or a couple minutes that we have left. When we look at this story, we assume that Mike, we were saying this yesterday, and I assume you agree, it's going to be a little while before we know anything definitive on this.
On the federal prosecutor, yes, looking into the Cuomo administration and the Buffalo Billions, yeah, it takes months, and it'll be kind of below the radar, and then it will come back at one point. But it's right now that it's happening, just as the legislature is in a position to make some reforms to get rid of this way that, you know, you can skirt the law to give as much money as you want to a campaign contribution by setting up little dummy corporations called the LLC loophole.
Do you see any push for that going on?
I see it on editorial pages across the state. I see minority legislators in each house saying they would support it.
What a bunch of jerks. Don't they see the handwriting on the wall? That unless they do something, there was a poll, I think a Siena poll this morning, that showed 97% of the public think they're, you know, that they're corrupt. I mean, this is unbelievable.
Within the margin of error. Yeah. You know, it could be 101.
The one that really got me about this whole thing, I'm still shaking my head, is involved in this whole morass of who gave money to who for what. There was the company that was bidding that had given money, I believe, to the Cuomo campaign, and they were bidding on this thing, and there was a requirement in the Buffalo Billions that in order to get this contract, you had to have been in business for 50 years, 5-0. When they got caught for doing that, they said, no, that was a misprint. It was 15 years. I'd like to see some assembly or Senate committee bring the guy who prepared that up before the committee and say, you have put your hand on the Bible, now tell us, was it a misprint that it was 50 years or 15 years?
That kind of thing does not happen. Legislative hearings are not held looking at holding government.
Which is why, thank God for the federal investigators in this.
All right, we have to take a break. We have to go. I do just put this conversation on hold. There's two things I want to talk to you. Hugh Farley is not running. Is that what this is? Yeah, there you go.
Hugh Farley's not running?
Hugh Farley is not running for re-election.
That's impossible.
And Chris Gibson is not Gibson. Running for governor. So we have those stories to discuss, and we'll talk about much, much more when we come back. Alan Chartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, and of course we welcome your letters as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And we will continue our conversation. And yeah, I promise you, we'll also get to more Trump stuff later on. So then the letters will start. And the TSA next. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We would love your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. So, as I mentioned going into the break, two little political nuggets before we move on to other political nuggets, much bigger ones. That is, Chris Gibson announced yesterday he will not be seeking the office of governor in New York State. The congressman who formed an exploratory committee about 2 years ago, a year ago, right after he was reelected, said he was going to, this would be his last term in the House, and then he was going to form an exploratory committee. He has now accepted a post as a visiting lecturer at Williams College in Williamstown, Massachusetts, and has said that he will not be running for governor in 2018.
And also said he's out of politics.
Yes.
You know, I love Chris Gibson. He and I have been friends for a long time. And I love his family. He's a great guy. And it's a deep disappointment. And by the way, the New York Times said so this morning in an editorial, unusual editorial, saying that. He said he was going to be term limited. He was going to term limit himself. And unlike most politicians, he not only kept his word, but he kept it early. He had one more to go. Term that he could have done under his own, you know, layaway plan. So he's really something. It's too bad. It was clear to me. I've interviewed Ed Cox many times, the chairman of the Republican Party, Nixon's son-in-law, that he was going to that he was leaning. He denied this, but it sounded that way. He was leaning towards Astorino, who lost to Cuomo the last time out and who clearly will not win this time, I think, unless something bad happens to Cuomo.
I'm not sure that I'm following all this, yeah. But my cynical journalistic soul is saying, why did Chris Gibson pull out and pull out of politics altogether? What's really going on?
Sometimes people really do want to spend more time with their family and pursue other interests.
But they usually don't appoint a committee to explore a political bid. They usually figure that out ahead of time.
What if that committee said you can't win?
Yeah, there's a lot of competition, and I think I agree with Alan. Cox seemed to be tilting towards letting Astorino take another shot at it. And, you know, Chris Gibson is rated as the most moderate Republican member
True.
Of Congress.
Hard to.
I mean, this is outstanding. And he will play very well in upstate New York, but he may not be up for the hardball that is going to be needed to go against Andrew Cuomo, should Andrew Cuomo still be in a position to run for re-election in, you know, 2018. You know, he's been getting battled himself. He may pursue other interests and seek to spend more time with his family, too.
Well, he's brilliant. You know, he led battalions as a colonel. He was on the ground. He really did all of that stuff.
Decorated and military
He is.
Officer.
He taught at West Point. He's got a Ph.D. He's a very special man, very thoughtful man.
Grew up in the region, went to Siena College. He's very, very popular around here, without question, Chris Gibson. And people will be very disappointed because he was really bringing in a lot of support.
And as a Republican, a little different, as you suggest, Mike, and as my mom used to say, the best of that crowd.
And then there is the Hugh Farley news, which I mentioned was just released a few moments ago, that Hugh Farley put out a press release that he would not be seeking re-election for the 49th Senate District. He has been in that seat, Mike, I don't know.
40 years, actually.
40 years,
yeah.
20
terms.
Really, really long time. So, and he says that his wife of 57 years is dealing with health issues, and he said that it's his responsibility to spend time with her. So he is not going to be running for re-election.
Yeah, I mean, there'll probably be a free-for-all for both Republicans and Democrats to go for this. Farley just effortlessly walked to re-election every year. He had these yellow signs that said Families for Farley that people kept in their garages, and they'd pull out every 2 years. They were starting to get a little haggard looking, but they seemed to do the trick. Nobody seemed to come close to him. He's faced a couple of primary challenges, but it really didn't go far. And so he's walking away, having been extraordinarily successful. He was part of bringing Metroplex into Schenectady, which is responsible for the rejuvenation downtown. And, you know, he has a lot to be proud of, and he's in his early 80s. But it's a seat that is probably a Republican district, but a Democrat, a popular Democrat,
could
win. And it's a bad time for the Senate Republicans to lose an important seat.
Well, we keep winning. We keep hearing that, and I've known this for years, that the person in waiting has always been Jim Tedisco. We've interviewed him here many times. He's in the Assembly, and as you know, when you're a Republican in the Assembly, you have the power of warm spit. But when you when you go to the Senate, you got some real power. And I have no doubt that Tedisco will be one of the guys who does it, and probably has a real foot up on this whole thing. So I think that's something to watch. There was a while that we thought that the offspring of Hugh Farley would be
his son Bob Farley, yeah, who was in the county legislature,
yeah, would be the natural heir apparent.
Right. And he's left politics. And,
yes,
yeah.
And he did not do that well.
Yeah, he wasn't as popular as his dad, who knew everybody on a first name basis all throughout Schenectady and Saratoga and Fulton County and wherever his district went.
And I just think I have to say that for years he served. Hugh Farley served on the WAMC board.
Let's move on to other stuff and talk about what else is making news in the world, and then we'll take a break and we'll get some letters on the other side. So, in the political stuff, I'll just sort of throw all of these out at once here. Bernie Sanders talking about a contested convention, saying that he can force a contested convention. And the question is, will he really be able to, and does he really want to, and will he, if he does, will he win one? Then there is the story about Donald Trump and how many political pundits are saying that he is very far behind in preparing for the general election, that he has put so much of his resources into the, and I don't mean financial, but so many resources into the primary campaign that there, and because the Republican establishment has not glommed onto him in great numbers, that power structure to run a general election campaign is quite weak, and I throw that out to the panel.
Okay, well, first of all, Hillary Clinton also could have gone and contested the convention last time. In fact, she was ahead of Barack Obama in 2008 in the popular vote, not the case between Hillary and Bernie. She opted not to do that because it would be an ugly fight that would rent the party, possibly hurt her as well. And so she magnanimously said, okay, it's over. Barack, you have it. You won fair and square. So every Democratic election is basically contested unless there's such a huge opening. It's got to be like 18 to 20% difference between the two candidates. That's very rare. Or else you use the superdelegates. Why Bernie is saying, no, we're not going to use the superdelegates, I have consistently said, is crazy. That's part of the system. It's set up that way. So he can bring a fight. He can go in and say, yep, we're still fighting right to the end. But he is not going to win the superdelegates. And once again, his willingness to contest the election is proof of why he won't get those superdelegates. He's fighting now for Bernie and his platform rather than for the Democratic Party.
I hate to say it, but I agree with you. I am somebody who voted for Bernie.
Let it be said on this day.
Again, yeah.
The year of our Lord. Yes.
That I did, and we know it, and I thought it was somewhat gutsy to say so, because most people don't, in this kind of job. But I thought it was important you know where I was coming from. I've been getting letters from some of the Bernieites, actually from one lady, who is very angry at me. And says, you should go until the minute he says he's done, and then he's not done. But I think that Rosemary's right. What in the world would make Bernie Sanders think that the superdelegates are going to turn around and say, okay, Bernie, you're right, we're going to all vote for you? It's not going to happen.
Yeah, there's about 580 superdelegates in the Democrats, and 520 are committed to Hillary Clinton, and the rest are committed to Sanders. And why they would ever switch over, it makes no sense.
I can't see it happening. And one other thing, Hillary, unlike Trump, has already switched to the general campaign. She's running a general campaign right now. She's not in Indiana, which votes today. She's in California. She's in, Ohio, and then California. She's already aiming at the national audience.
Rosemary, I saw something in the paper yesterday. Perhaps I was wrong. But I saw that the distance between Hillary and Trump was collapsing. In other words, that it was getting much closer. Now, it may have been in reference to New York State, Joe, as opposed to...
the national polls that I have seen is that it's still... I think you're right. I think the term you used is correct. I think it's collapsing. It was, 20, 30 points ahead. And from my understanding, in the Bernie Sanders logic of saying that to stay in and contest these delegates is that according to the same poll numbers, he has a better chance of beating Trump in the fall, and his favorability is better than hers.
But where is it? How close is it right now?
I thought it was 7 points.
Well, 7 points is unbelievable.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty
And
close.
For those people who tell me, including the president, that Trump is not, didn't tell me personally, but said it over the air, that Trump will not win this election, I think you're potentially wrong. I think Trump could win.
I have never said that it would be easy. I think Trump is a formidable candidate against any Democrat. He has a following. And that is the case. The polls at this point, I think, they're completely speculative. Every election that we've talked about, even in the primaries, we've seen a collapsing. That's what's happened.
But it's important, Rosemary.
And the
second thing, one more thing, and then I'll shut up.
Okay. The other thing is that this story about Trump not having a ground game and the Republicans not being behind him, that's going to make the difference. You're going to see then Hillary and Trump switch to a general campaign, and Hillary's way out ahead. And that will change. You're going to see the polls change the other way.
Well, I agree. It certainly looks that way to me. And the other factor, is that, well, as you were saying, it's electoral votes that you have to win. It's not the same thing as
Correct.
Just being popular. He could be very popular some places, but his strategy may not be suitable.
Just a couple of things. One is the big story that came out yesterday was the Rasmussen poll which had Trump ahead by 2 points. And so that then became the Fox News story.
Sure, the
you
night,
know,
right.
So
Rafferty's in the best Republican poll.
But meanwhile,
he predicted Romney was going to win too.
The other polls, USA Today, NBC, all have Hillary Clinton up as of this week. Have Hillary Clinton up anywhere between 7 and 11 points.
I mean, the polls just really are just not reliable
no,
at
I think
this
they're
point.
Important.
You've got Trump has been on television with long rallies every day this week. He is the news in Indiana as he was in last week's voting. And that makes a difference. It does, Alan. It does.
Okay, look, there's something going on here which I think we have to recognize. Am I a Trump fan? No. But there's something going on. There is a political revolution. It's a term Bernie uses all the time. You get all of these legislators and Republicans and everybody getting in everybody's faces and saying, this guy's not qualified, he's no good, he's a joke, he's a clown. We're talking about the top Republicans in the United States, and the voters in these primaries have been saying, shoo fly.
Well, right. and I'm sorry, one other thing mm-hmm. that is important is that unlike Bernie, who has lots of supporters who go to rallies and they make a lot of noise and they call radio stations and send me nasty notes, they don't vote. But Trump is turning out people who are voting. And that's been one of the real phenomena of this primary season, is that you're seeing people who have never voted before turning out for Donald Trump.
Right. Shouldn't we also note, and back to the earlier when I was setting this up, as to Trump and the general election and not having the mechanism, we've heard this from the very beginning, from the minute he got into the election, that there wasn't a chance because he didn't have this and he didn't have that.
But
he has gone against every single solitary wisdom and pundit on every level. They have a riot in Chicago, not a riot, but a fracas in Chicago. Oh, that's going to kill him. He says this about this person. Well, that's going to kill him. Nothing has done that. And so it does stand to reason, to Alan's point, that
it's a toss-up.
You know, at what point, especially when you then, because what he is also very good at is taking these polls, bringing them to his people and saying, we have a real shot at this. Look, I'm 2 points ahead in this poll. I'm going to kill. I'm really going to kill in the election. I don't know. Doesn't that help him?
Well, yes, it certainly should. Does, because it's not like he's 50 points behind or 25 points behind. It means he's competitive. We're getting a lot of mail, by the way.
Because we talked about Trump.
Well,
you guys are so predictable.
Well, wait a second. You sound so, you know, so condescending about the whole thing.
Well, we talk about state corruption. We talk about, politicians
all
in New York.
All the heavy things
the
that people
region.
Write in and say, all you ever do is talk Nobody about Trump. In. Why don't you talk about blah, blah, blah? And we talk about blah, blah, blah. And what do we get? Nothing from you guys.
Well.
All right.
That's
audience
my,
has
that's
been
my
called
teacher,
out.
Little, my teacher lesson.
Little chastising from Rosemary. Let's go to a break. We'll come back. We'll get letters, and I promise we'll save the best for last. And by that, I mean the TSA story. We'll be back right after this.
Support for WAMC comes from MPAC, presenting an evening with Swiss jazz pianist Nick Barsch, his band Mobile, and their concept of ritual groove music. Thursday, May 5th at 8 p.m., mpac.rpi.edu. Beacon Fine Art Printing, Beacon, offering museum-quality digital archival printing, scanning, retouching, and mounting for artists, photographers, galleries, and art enthusiasts. BeaconFineArtPrinting.com. And Curtis Lumber, specializing in deck and dock design, featuring Trex composite decking and railings, pressure-treated wood, and more. Design consultation available, CurtisLumber.com.
All right, we've got about 10 minutes left, and we're going to get to some letters, get an idea of what's on your mind, and then we'll go to our finale.
John says what you said. Trump leads Clinton by 2 points in the Rasmussen poll. Paul says, do any of you really believe Trump will build a wall and deport 11 million? No. Anybody else?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. Grace says, Bernie fans don't vote. Roundtable, Rosemary says Bernie fans don't vote. I think she meant can't vote. If every primary were open and Democratic Party didn't suppress the vote, the outcome would have been different.
Funny. Hillary voters seem to be able to do it. Same party, same rules. Sorry. No, that's not what I meant.
Juan says, Rosemary, Bernie supporters don't vote because they can't. It's called closed primaries.
Which are a good idea.
Well, whatever they
are. Bernie might have tried joining the party.
Okay, Manicho says, Mike says, why Bernie is still fighting? No, the superdelegates won't turn around and support him, but the point is that he pulls more of the independent vote than Hillary is a valid one to consider. And then on and on, but too much. Anthony says, good morning, Roundtable. Bernie Sanders has a better chance of moving his political revolutionary agenda along by not being president. Revolution starts from the ground up, not vice versa. That's from Anthony. And MF says, please note, panel, for the most part, these superdelegates had not previously been linked with a candidate when they pledged their support to Obama, but there were also several dozen superdelegates who switched from Clinton to Obama, including some high-profile ones, including John Lewis. Well, that's when the handwriting was on the wall.
Correct.
Okay. Sean says, primaries always bring out the fanatical. When the general happens, Trump will get beaten by a rented mule.
I wish I thought that were true.
Okay. Argyle says, did Gibson get bought off by Cuomo even if he didn't know it? No. Come on. Stop that.
That seems unlikely.
Okay. Karen says, so disappointed. I'm a Democrat who was excited about voting for him, meaning I'm Chris. That's the problem. Too many good ones leave. He didn't play to politics and listen with concern to his constituents. Big loss for our political system. I agree. Alexander says, do you think that New York would have turned out differently if the voter registration laws were different? I could not vote for Bernie because I was unaffiliated voter until March. Well, as Rosemary always says, you got to know the rules.
That's how you win.
Okay.
You got to know the rules.
Okay. And Eric says, once again, it doesn't matter who's president. Real threat is gridlock in Congress. No one will pass anything. Okay. And Mark says, myopia, please consider the independent vote again. You lose credibility when you ignore this very relevant fact. I've always talked about the independent vote and that's why you win elections. That's why you have to get the middle. And the middle is so important. Cruz will never get the middle. He will not. He's too, you know, doctrinaire right wing. Trump might get the middle. I hate to say it. Okay, Frank says, Rosemary perplexes me. She's bright but single-minded. The natives are restless, and mainstream politicians are out of favor for us. Less educated, poorly informed. That's from Fred. And Al says,
They vote.
When Trump says that Clinton is playing the woman card, he means that she is saying vote for me because she is a woman. More about being a woman than the issues.
Oh, come on.
Okay. I'm just reading them, okay? Alan, don't you think that Bernie is thinking something else? Emails, et cetera, might come to light that would make her stumble? No. I mean, this woman has been looked at so often and by so many people. It would be hard to
believe. That is
called
grasping at straws.
I mean, there were two Senate campaigns, a presidential campaign, this presidential campaign.
Nine Benghazi hearings. Nine.
And the president of the United States standing up the other night and say, when she's president.
Yeah. Pretty much.
You know, I
mean,
whoever she may be, right?
Yeah. And then we heard from Grace, who said, no subject. Okay. Florence says, is it possible that people like Chris Gibson and Hugh Farley want to distance themselves from this whole Trump mess? No. Flip says, Rosemary, you're correct that Bernie is not fighting for the Democratic Party. He's fighting for the rest of the U.S. citizens. Okay, thank you for that. Goes on. Tom says, Bernie is neither fighting for the Bernie nor the Democratic Party. He's fighting for the American people without regard to his image or political ambition. Steven says, hi, panel. Steve here in Berkshire. I think Bernie knows he has no chance of winning the nomination, but is very upset by the process and will now use his position to give voice to the progressives and try to pull the Democrats further left. I think that's probably true.
Let's say two more.
Okay.
All right, or we can
move on. James says, Farley, my senator, is retiring, which is a good thing since he hasn't actually worked in a long time. Gibson, my former congressman, when announcing on Time Warner last night that he would not run for governor, said he might support Trump for president. I lost respect for him. And Jamie says, Albany again. So it's another scandal in Albany regarding who took what from who. And the end result of this, is there another scandal in Albany? Will this take a state constitutional convention to fix? I so disagree with all of you. What makes you think that the same guys who are going to be running the state constitutional convention aren't the same guys who are running the legislature? Please, give me a break, will you please?
All right. Security lines at airports are getting longer, much longer, and wait times could reach epidemic levels when air travel packs this summer. That according to airlines, airports, and federal officials. A combination of fewer Transportation Security Administration screeners, tighter budgets, new checkpoint procedures, and growing numbers of passengers is already creating a mess at airports around the country. While federal security officials say they are hiring and training hundreds of additional screening ops. Additional screening officers. Matters are not expected to improve anytime soon.
To make a long story short, TSA sucks, as I've been saying for quite some time.
Can you say that on the radio?
Oh, my God. They cost billions of dollars, and they are completely ineffective. They have never stopped. Yes, people keep asking me. There are studies. They have never stopped terrorism. They have never stopped anyone from getting on a plane.
To stick up for them, you know this how?
Because there's been studies on it. Okay, The Economist did a whole big report about it.
You don't understand. If they're looking at everybody as they come through, do you think there are maybe some people who don't come through because they're looking at everybody?
Okay, is that worth billions of dollars?
Well, if the plane
not
blows
just a
up,
few, and now their cure for what's going on now is not to reorganize, not to work in tandem with airline companies, not to do anything that would make our life business better, but to get more money, to hire more, and to increase their overtime budget. And by the way, do not pay for their super program where you pay money and get a chip and supposedly you go through faster.
Because
they're so
free?
Yes, because
do
they're so over they're so understaffed and overworked that they just push all those people who have paid extra money and gone through great difficulty. You have to go down to JFK from Albany to get one, for example. And then you just go into the regular lines. You now have to get to the airport 3 hours early.
I'm a big fan of the TSA.
TSA, you mean the agency?
Yeah, I'm a big fan because I think they're protecting our lives. They may not
they
be
do
doing
not. It. They, well, here's what works, Alan. Put air marshals on. Increase their
that
overtime
too.
Budget.
It's not one or
put,
the other.
Put new equipment that will take a look, x-ray every piece of baggage that goes into the cargo hold. Right now, we put all this effort into carry-on bags. And what's blowing up? Bombs in the cargo plane.
Well, I
and
don't think
put on equipment that, like doors that lock, cockpit doors that lock. That actually prevents violence.
I think
terrorism.
All of those are good ideas, but I also think we have to have a TSA to protect us. And frankly, unlike my wife, this is one of those marital issues. She's with you.
She's right.
Well, people say she's always right, and she does. But but in fact, I think. Look, I don't want an airplane blowing up.
Nobody does. But the question is, should that be worth standing 2, 3, 4 hours in?
Billions of dollars. Billions let me mention. 50,000 people almost work for TSA. Why? And it doesn't work. It just is. It's a system that's
so
maybe
you
should
want
be run
no
by
screening. Is that what you want?
No.
Oh, Alan, of course not. I want it done like the Israelis do, effectively.
Well,
and
you know
efficiently.
What they do.
I want a whole new look at this agency.
You know what they do? They profile.
I think some profile is worth it.
Wow. Okay. So we're out of time. I'm so sorry.
I love this issue.
I know you do. You're passionate. You are definitely passionate about this issue. All right. Well, we're out of time, so my apologies. We have to move on. I do want to mention that it's World Press Freedom Day as well, so we didn't get to talk about that.
Press freedom is in trouble around the world.
All right.